music from the film The Red Pony, composed and conducted there by Aaron Copland. The New Philharmonia Orchestra performed. Aaron Copland died at the age of 90 last weekend. Coming up next, Stardate with Joel Block, and then Brain Damage with your host, Eric Corley, here on WUSB Stony Brook.
Stardate December 8th. Asteroids are little rocky bodies, a few tens to a few hundreds of miles across. The first four asteroids were discovered nearly 200 years ago. Then 37 years passed before someone discovered the fifth asteroid. In 1845, a postmaster in Germany was very carefully charting the stars. He was surprised to notice one starry point that moved apart from the others. It was the fifth asteroid. He later named it Astraea for the mythological goddess of justice. No one had anticipated the first asteroid, much less five of them. Astronomers were really looking for another planet, thought to exist in the gap between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter. A planet was never found in that space. Instead, the asteroids were found, and this area between Mars and Jupiter has become known as the asteroid belt. But they'd been looking for a planet, and so astronomers at first explained asteroids as fragments left behind in a cataclysmic event, the likes of which we'd never seen, the explosion of a planet. That idea of asteroids as the debris from this planet survived into this century. Now, most astronomers think the asteroids are material that might have gone into a planet that never formed. Through telescopes, asteroids are just points of light. They look like little stars. That's why they were given the name asteroid, which means star-like. And by the way, there are now thousands of named asteroids, with more being discovered every year. This is Stardate. Our program is written and produced by Deborah Bird. Stardate is a production of the McDonald Observatory at the University of Texas at Austin. And for the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
Good evening and welcome to Brain Damage.
that strange, overpowering audience reaction rippled across the continent. Perhaps Roger Christian can explain a few reasons for this Beatlemania.
One reason is John Lennon, the chief Beatle. Without John, there would be no Beatles. John was the one who organized the group and gave them their name, one that has become, in the past year, the most important word in the English vocabulary. On October 9th, 1940, John Winston Lennon was born in Liverpool. He grew to be 5 feet 11 inches tall, with brown hair and brown eyes. John Lennon is a determined 23-year-old whose somewhat stern face gives the impression of an angry young man. Fittingly, Lennon is called the chief Beatle, but we don't let it count for much, really, he says. If we've got to have a leader, I'm him. The appointment of John as group leader came about not from necessity, but only to fulfill a public demand. People kept coming up and asking who the leader of the group was. The Beatles replied, nobody. The people said, well, there must be a boss. So the others said to me, well, you started the whole thing off, John, so you've got to be our leader. And that's the way it was. John goes on to say, ours is a cooperative group. Nobody lays down any laws. We talk things over. We have our rows. Nothing serious, though. Just differences like any other human being. And like his three fellow Beatles, Lennon is an individual who doesn't hesitate at any time to speak his mind. Once, when asked about politics, he replied, politics? They have no message for me, nor for any of our group. The bomb, nuclear disarmament, well, like everyone else, I don't want to end up a festering heap. But I don't stay up nights worrying. I'm preoccupied with life, not death. Born in Liverpool, John attended Liverpool High School and later the Liverpool College of Art. Lennon readily admits his school life was far from being successful. He goes on to say, my whole school life was a case of I couldn't care less. It was just a joke as far as I was concerned. But don't think I'm proud of it. I wouldn't want anyone to follow my example. Al Wyman, in our Beatle biography and sound, probes deeper into John Lennon's fascinating mind.
Although two of the three R's of school held no particular fascination for John Lennon, he always had a desire to express himself with the medium of the third R, writing. His originality of style is evident in his book published by Simon & Schuster. The book, aptly entitled In His Own Right, is a huge sales success. When John was asked if he employed the help of a ghostwriter, he jocularly replied,
No, who's going to help you with a thing like that?
Yeah, that's right.
As for the offbeat style John employed within its pages, he candidly says,
well, that's the way I think.
The huge success of his book amply overshadows his self-admitted failures in school. But even before his literary achievement, John was to taste success in a Liverpool club called The Cavern. But what if there had been no Cavern Club, no Brian Epstein, no George Martin, no Capitol Records, no Lady Luck to smile down on those four lads from Liverpool? George Harrison very simply puts it this way.
I don't know. I know if we weren't making a lot of money and popular, then we'd just be poor, unpopular Beatles.
After many successful months of playing at the Cavern, the Beatles landed a booking tour with a Larry Parnes pop show. The job wasn't a very good one, just backing a young singer, but it was the first time that the Beatles had played outside of their native Liverpool. After that came their booking at the Indra Club in Hamburg, Germany, and a short time later, their discovery by Brian Epstein. While in Germany, the other Beatles, at that time including the late Stuart Sutcliffe, Paul McCartney, who had been with John since the days of the not-too-successful Nerk twins, and George, who had just become a Beatle, all found the young German Fräuleins much to their liking. But it was clear that John, although greatly elated over the group's newfound fame, longed for his home in Liverpool. And in his words, my love was in Liverpool. She and I met one day and suddenly fell in love. Later we were married, and I loved her. And like every good husband, John wanted his family to have financial security. However, at this point, this seems to be the least of his worries. When asked about the rumor if he or any member of the group was a millionaire, he casually scoffed.
No, that's another lousy rumor.
Brian Epstein, a millionaire.
No, even he's not one, poor fellow.
Where does all the money go?
Well, a lot of it goes to Her Majesty.
She's a millionaire.
And she, too, is a Beatle fan. And as long as we have Beatle fans, I guess we'll always have Beatlemania.
Well, if you tune up and down the FM dial tonight, you'll probably hear all kinds of Beatles songs and John Lennon songs and things like that. But what you're hearing here on Brain Damage tonight is not just another excuse to play Beatles songs, as being the 10th anniversary of John Lennon's assassination. Actually, I guess it was about right about this time of night 10 years ago that happened. And what we are going to endeavor to do here tonight is bring some stuff your way that you won't hear in other places. For instance, that piece from the Beatles story with the amazing music in the background. Oh, that was incredible. I think John would have liked to hear that. Yeah, we heard about John, and actually that's a double record set with all such features as On Stage with the Beatles, Beatlemania in Action, Brian Epstein, the man behind the Beatles, George Harrison, Paul McCartney, Ringo Starr, all that kind of thing. But
You know, there's so much more to it. If you listen to what's being played on most stations tonight, you'll hear, you know, a lot of Beatles songs. A lot of Beatles songs had nothing to do with John Lennon. But we're going to try to focus on some of the things that were a bit more personal to him. I was also able to dig up a special that we did here on WUSB, myself and Gary Pecorino, years ago, many years ago. So many years ago, I'm embarrassed to admit how long ago it was. It was while he was still alive, let's put it that way. It was more than 10 years ago. And we'll be cutting in and out of that. I have no idea what we said on it, to be honest, so we'll be just sort of seeing what's going to happen there. So if you hear a couple of strange voices and one sounds kind of familiar, that's probably what we're doing, is going back into time and listening to that. Speaking of going back into time, we're going to listen to something now from a concert back in 1972. Back in August 30th, 1972, John Lennon's first live appearance since the breakup of the Beatles. And it was also the last live recording that he ever made. And what we'll hear is a version of Come Together. This was produced by Yoko Ono, by the way, which I think is pretty interesting. Now, if anyone out there has something they want to request, give us a call, 632-6901, area code 516. And if you're going to request something, you know, I wouldn't go around requesting things like, you know, Nowhere Man or Obladi or things like that. You know, not the kind of thing that you could tune up the dial and hear probably in about 5 minutes anyway. Try to think of something different, something from the solo career, something unusual. We've got a couple of really unusual records here. And in fact, maybe you'll call us and ask for those and make us feel really happy here for having them, because we do intend to play some things that you're not going to hear anyplace else. It's a special edition of Brain Damage tonight. John Lennon in retrospect 10 years after.
We go back in the past just once. You might remember this better than I do, actually.
Okay. Something about a blast off, that's all I know. One, two, three, four.
To be a joker, cause he
something about In My Life. That beautiful Baroque piano piece in the middle, of course, is played by George Martin. And that's one of the things that has always leapt out at me on that song. I just love that piano piece.
Right. In fact, what that is, it's a piano played by George Martin, speeded up.
Right.
And it has the effect of a harpsichord.
Right. They were starting to get into the speeded up tapes and reverse effects and that kind of stuff.
Right. Exactly. It was right around there, and then they continued on with the Revolver album, etc. You know.
And the ideas are starting to flow around, too. Girl Before That, of course... Lennon said that he was attacking the Christian ethic. A man must break his back to earn his day of pleasure. And, well, there were quite a few things in there, of course.
Right.
John thought up the chorus of Tit, 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 you know, which most people don't catch, but
right,
it's in there. And there are also, you know, a few other hidden things.
Right, there's the part where they suck in the air, supposedly, smoking a marijuana cigarette, exactly. Of course, that's, you know... All
which they probably were doing at the time.
Well, yes, it's very possible, I suppose.
George Martin sitting with them.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that, but at any rate. All right, now, after that, after Nowhere Man, the next single that came out was Rain and Paperback Writer. Paperback Writer was the A-side and Rain was the B-side. It was the first single, incidentally, that did not go to number one since 1964. Lennon composed Rain, and it was the first articulation of a philosophy John and George were to expand on in their later work, the manifestations of the material world, so to speak.
And as we were talking about before, it goes into the backwards effects at the end of the song. After you hear the drum beats, and then the song will be played backwards, and it really sounds pretty good.
Right.
It took me a little while to even figure out what was happening, except the words don't seem to make sense. But one day I was just looking at the record, and I played it backwards, and it turned out to be the beginning of Rain at the end of the song, for
right.
A few seconds anyway.
Well, in fact, what John says about that, the nonsense syllables at the end, is actually him feeding a reprise of his vocal track over the instrumental coda. He says here, I got home at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I was stoned out of my head. I staggered up to the tape recorder and put on Rain, and I was in a trance. And in the earphones, I'm saying, what is it? What is it? And he said later on, I really wanted the whole song backwards. But what we did, we just tagged it on to the end. And it just so happened the tape recorder was going the wrong way when he was stoned out of his head, you know, in the morning and just talking into it. And that's how it happened.
I think it would have sounded really nice, the whole song backwards, because I know the end of this song sounds really interesting. Is that kind of thing he was starting to get into, which eventually led to all sorts of weird things like Revolution 9 and that kind of stuff.
Exactly. This was actually the beginning of it, and it kept happening, actually. Here's Rain.
Yes, I know we just heard this song, but we're listening to a tape that was made, 12 or 13 years ago, I suppose. You're listening to Brain Damage, Sarah Corley with you up until midnight. And we've got a couple of other interesting John Lennon bits and pieces for you on this unhappy anniversary, 10th anniversary of his death. One of the first records that came out was Life with the Lions. I guess, solo record, you would say, with John and Yoko. Came out in November of 1968, which was when the Beatles were still together. Says on the back, no comment, George Martin. Well, here, a bit of side two. And, again, we're welcoming your calls, 632-6901, area code 516, to make any kind of request for Lennon bits. But, the more imaginative, the better. Okay, we're gonna hear No Bed for Beatle John. We're going to hear Baby's Heartbeat, 2 minutes silence, which is exactly what it says it is, 2 minutes of total silence. So when that happens, don't panic. And finally, Radio Play. Now, this is not a top 40 kind of record that you're about to hear. This is something very experimental back in 1968. 68 when the White Album was coming out. This is something else John Lennon was involved in. And I think it takes a lot of guts to be able to put something like that out. You know, not to always put out a polished product, but to sometimes be a bit raw and be a bit unpredictable and take the risk of people not liking it. Let's take a listen to side two of Unfinished Music number two, Life with the Lions.
Coming deep. extended divorce suite between Cynthia Lennon and Mr. Lennon's wife.
Your plea, it is being distributed, but it may be that some record shops will still refuse to handle it.
Now, because of your
election. Yes?
Okay, I'm ready.
Well, but don't record until I get home.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There's nothing wrong with your radio sets. Well, actually, I don't know there's nothing wrong with your radio sets. There could be a lot wrong with your radio sets, but what you just heard came from a record. A record called Unfinished Music, Number 2, Life with the Lions. And we heard four pieces, I guess you would say. No Bed for Beetle John, Baby's Heartbeat, 2 Minutes Silence, and Radio Play. It's interesting to note that this came out on Zappel Records. Not Apple, Zappel. Although it says manufactured by Apple Records, so I'm not quite sure where that all stands. But that was a record I've always wanted to play. Oh, look at this. I even have the inner sleeve, and it says something. Unfinished Music Number 2, Life with the Lions, recorded on a cassette at Queen Charlotte Hospital, 2nd West Ward, Room 1, London, England, on the 4th and the 25th of November, 1968. How about that? And yes, I realize, folks, I realize for a lot of you that was a difficult experience listening to all that, but it's something that is part of John Lennon. If you're going to pay tribute to John Lennon, you should know more than I Am the Walrus and all that kind of thing. Because there was an awful lot to him, some of which you can agree with, some of which you might not agree with. But we're celebrating the man's life tonight and all aspects of it. All right, let's take a quick look at the news. 17 Americans freed by Iraq are flying across the Atlantic at this hour on a plane chartered by former Texas Governor John Connally. They're due to arrive early Sunday morning at Ellington Air Force Base near Houston. It's not known when the other several hundred American hostages will be allowed to leave, but even when they're all safely home, President Bush says that will do nothing to lessen the threat of war. Bush, who arrived back in Washington from South America tonight, says so long as Saddam Hussein keeps his troops in Kuwait, the possibility of armed conflict remains. Iraq says it wants to wait until January 12th for talks with Secretary of State Baker in Baghdad. That would be only... What do you want to bet all the news networks are going to have as the caption, Baker in Baghdad? Yeah, I know they're going to do that. I just know it. But anyway, that's not important. That'll be only 3 days before the UN set deadline for Iraq to be out of Kuwait. The U.S. prefers a late December date. And National Security Advisor Brent Scowcroft told CNN today, Saddam is just trying to drag things out. And at the United Nations, the Security Council has put off discussion on a resolution calling for an eventual Mideast peace conference. God, it's the last thing we want now, isn't it? The Council, faced by the threat of a U.S. veto, adopted a Soviet motion to postpone consideration of the resolution until Monday. Israel is strongly opposed to the resolution. I'd just like to know why, you know? I mean, are they opposed to peace in the Middle East or what? You know, how can you be opposed to a peace conference? I can't figure that one out. I mean, what horrible things happen at peace conferences? Like being opposed to oxygen. Anyway, NASA. Remember them? Yeah, NASA. They're keeping their options open, but no decision has been announced on whether the space shuttle Columbia will come home Monday, a day earlier than planned, because of a plumbing problem. Clogged lines are preventing wastewater from being dumped overboard, and there's a much less polite way of saying what their problem is. But I feel for those guys up there. Boy, I hope that's one vessel that doesn't crash into the Earth. Well, all is well with the Galileo spacecraft, which made a flyby of Earth today. The Jupiter-bound explorer used the home planet's gravity to help it pick up speed for the remaining 5 years of its journey. And Romanian students and union leaders hoping to topple the government plan to launch nationwide strikes next week. How about toppling two governments in 1 year? That'd be great. Or toppling the replacement government on the same day that they toppled the government last year. You know? If anything's possible, it'll happen in Romania. Anyway, it's the latest sign of discontent against leaders accused of having ties to the regime of executed communist dictator Nicolae Ceausescu. The government tried to derail the protest by promising a 6-month postponement in plans to hike food prices, but one union spokesman said, "This is a bait, and we won't take it." And a German newspaper, I don't know why they tell you the name of it, can't possibly pronounce it, but I'll try, Neue Osnabrücker Zeitung, is reporting that a ranking member of Chancellor Helmut Kohl's Christian Democratic Party is demanding the Soviet Union hand over former East German leader Erich Honecker, who is wanted on manslaughter charges. Honecker, who is accused of issuing shoot-to-kill orders to East German guards at the Berlin Wall, denies all charges. He's taken refuge at a Soviet military hospital outside Berlin. Well, usually, you know, we devote a lot more time to what's going on in the world. We talk about what's going on in the world. But tonight, somehow, this sad anniversary that we're facing overshadows all of that. You know, I remember 10 years ago, in this very radio station, the reaction that we had when we found out that John Lennon had been shot. And nothing since then, nothing before then, I've ever seen to bring so many people together in such a sad mood. A real feeling of loss that remains to this day. And while it's a sad occasion, it's also something that I think we can be happy about, just knowing that that John Lennon has been around, has changed all of us, has reached all of us in some way. And what I'm trying to do tonight is just expand the number of ways that he could have possibly reached people, because there's a lot that he did that doesn't get played. Now, a lot of people say, well, that's because it sucked, you know, and that's why you shouldn't play the stuff on the air. But, you know, it's all in the eyes of the listeners or the ears of the listeners or whatever. It's all up to you to decide. That's kind of the theme of USB here. And we believe in playing the things that other places won't touch for whatever reason, because it won't sell records or because it's too controversial. We're going to get into a little bit of both. And, in fact, speaking of controversy,
Officer Tony Verrill via transatlantic phone. And Tony told us,
two different designs for the cover of the American Yesterday and Today album were submitted to NEMS in London by Capitol Records. These two used here at NEMS, including the Beatles. In fact, I now believe that Capitol Records are almost certain to use one of the boys standing around a large trunk. The picture, which has in fact caused some outcry in America, was obviously misinterpreted. Both pictures are the work of photographer Robert Whittaker.
Tony?
Yeah?
Can you tell us, if you know, what the meaning was behind the picture with the broken dolls and the meat? Why that pose? Was there a reason for it?
There was no specific reason for this particular design, in fact, except that Robert Whittaker was out to sort of take a different picture of the Beatles. He is always striving to do different pictures, whether it's with Beatles or whoever it is. And this was an original idea which occurred to him. Obviously, a lot of people in different parts of the world will come to their own conclusions and make all kinds of different sort of stories out of this and reasons for it. I don't think there is any sort of hidden meaning in this picture at all, or really any sort of
today here, but it is on the Revolver album Over in England. There was a problem with that album where Lennon lost three of his compositions as they crossed overseas, but Anya Burke Can Sing, Dr. Robert, and I'm Only Sleeping are actually on the Revolver album, or supposed to be here as well. Anya Burke Can Sing musically is a rousing number, almost in the old Beatles tradition, played on two electric guitars, bass, and drums, with a minimum of studio shenanigans. They could even have done it on tour that summer, but what was is one of the lines like, "You say you've seen seven wonders and your bird is green, but you don't see me." Perhaps John was still under the influence of Bob Dylan, who at the time seemed to take pleasure in confounding the sectors of his message with cryptic lyrics that made no sense at all. Okay. Nothing would ever keep John from shooting his mouth off in the presence of reporters. He said, "Christianity will go. It will vanish and shrink. I needn't argue about that. I'm right and I will be proved right. We're more popular than Jesus Christ right now. I don't know which will go first, rock and roll or Christianity. Jesus was all right, but his disciples were thick and ordinary. It's them twisting it that ruins it for me." And as a result of this message...
some people didn't take it too kindly.
Exactly. In fact, it was a stamp out the Beatles brigade down south where they were burning Beatle albums and not playing their records over the air anymore.
A lot of fun for the whole family. Get together and break and burn Beatle albums.
Exactly, break and burn your
Beatle
albums.
And DJs would sponsor these things, too. It was really a sight to see.
Right, and in fact...
One minute they loved them, and the next minute they were destroying all the records that they had, and probably some records that would have been worth a lot of money today.
True, on the old Capitol
Beatles
label.
Had the last laugh.
And it brings to mind, like, I just recently, the burning of the disco albums in Chicago. That was
Doing doubleheaders.
right. Then he apologized. He says, "I suppose if I had said television was more popular than Jesus, I would have gotten away with it. I'm sorry I opened my mouth. I'm not anti-God, anti-religion, or anti-Christ. I was not knocking it. I was not saying we are greater or better." But regardless, anyway, that was...
Lennon's problem is that he just speaks his mind. He says what's on his mind, and a lot of times people just didn't take to that very nicely.
Well, that's true, but he was always interesting, to say the least.
Oh, definitely.
You know.
They are standing still. Number nine. Number.
May it serve you well.
Underman. Honey 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 Underman.
Well, now I suppose you know the secret of life. You've heard part of Revolution 9 backwards. Supposedly that last part of it, which is number 9 backwards, is supposed to be saying, "Turn me on, dead man." I don't know. That's one of the things that all those crazy Beatle fans thought up. But there were definitely things that were in there backwards. I heard a symphony orchestra and some piano pieces, some other music of various sorts.
Well, supposedly... that was "Turn Me On, Dead Man," and there was another part there where he was saying, "Let me out, let me out." And yeah. It all had to do with the supposedly Paul dying in a car crash. That was the
whole thing. That's how the fans saw it. I don't know if that's what Lennon meant when he did it. At least he said he didn't mean that. He said he just pieced together a whole bunch of tapes and just saw what happened to them. And it does sound like that's what happened, but of course there are those who were try to find a hidden meaning. Perhaps there is hidden meaning, but there's also a good chance that there isn't. What we're going to hear from now is Lennon's first solo single. It's called "Give Peace a Chance."
Listening to John Lennon music and words tonight on Brain Damage Special Edition. Here we go until midnight. Feel free to give us a call at 632-6901, area code 516, with anything that you'd like to suggest that we get to in case we miss something. Gotten a couple of interesting suggestions already, and we'll try to get to them all. This report in on the Associated Press, his Manhattan home remains a shrine. His fans have not forgotten. On the 10th anniversary of his murder, John Lennon was remembered today with spontaneous tributes in New York, a plaque in his hometown of Liverpool, England, and a rendition of "Yesterday" on Moscow television. Hundreds of Lennon fans stopped by Strawberry Fields, the section of Central Park opposite the Manhattan apartment building, where he was shot to death by a deranged fan on December 8, 1980. Others left flowers outside the Dakota for his widow, Yoko Ono. Ono was not at the Dakota apartment today, according to a spokesman. She and the couple's 15-year-old son, Sean, were marking the anniversary quietly in Europe. Strawberry Fields Forever played softly from a boombox as visitors piled flowers and assorted mementos outside a makeshift memorial. In Los Angeles, fans were invited to do the same at Lennon's star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. In his hometown of Liverpool, England, people paid tribute along the Cavern Walk, which marks the nightclub where the Beatles got their start. Among the many Lennon friends and followers present were Father Tom McKenzie, immortalized as Father McKenzie in the Beatles' 1966 hit, Eleanor Rigby. The slain rocker also had a plaque dedicated Friday in his memory at the Beatles Museum in Liverpool. You know, it's interesting that they call him a rocker. At one point, I remember he was asked, are you a mod or you're a rocker? And he said, neither. I'm a maca. Oh, yes, that was John, all right. The Soviet TV evening news program Vremya also noted the anniversary, showing videotape of Lenin fans laying memorial flowers in strawberry fields. The program showed its weather forecast to the tune of the Beatles' hit Yesterday. I remember only a few years ago, people were arrested in Moscow for trying to have memorial services. How things are changing. Hal John would have been fascinated by the changes. We're listening to bits and pieces of a radio show that must be about 12 years old. And I honestly don't know what comes next. Let's find out together. Again, that number is 632-6901. The Ballad of John and Yoko. Of course, John had divorced Cynthia after he met Yoko in 1968, and the two of them came out with an album which was begun one midnight and finished by dawn. It was called Two Virgins, and the cover of the album was the two of them stark naked, and of course the cover was banned all over the place, and a different version came out with a paper bag over it. After that, well, before that, actually, we heard a the first Lennon single, Lennon solo single, called Give Peace a Chance, sort of a, it has a slogan-type sound to it, one of the first of a series of songs like that, which Lennon was to come out with.
And it says here, recorded in room 1742 at the Hotel La Reina, Elizabeth, Montreal. So that's where it was recorded,
yeah,
just in the motel room.
Pretty good sound for a motel room.
Not bad at all, not bad at all, actually.
But it was the only single ever to come out of that motel room, too.
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah. For the most part, motel rooms don't very high on the priority list. Okay, right now we're going to hear an outtake from a song which appeared on Abbey Road. It's called Me, Mr. Mustard.
Thank you.
And we are listening to Instant Karma from John Lennon. And if you find yourself pounding your fist into your head because I'm talking over the music, just tune down the dial. I'm sure you'll find this song somewhere else because everybody's playing John Lennon and the Beatles. The commercial stuff, you know. And this was a great song, though it is. It's a very commercial piece. And I'm sure you can find it very quickly somewhere else. What we want to bring you tonight in the remaining time we have is some of that stuff you might not have heard, like that rendition of, well, She Came In Through the Bathroom Window, was it? Something like that. It was one of those. Mean Mr. Mustard, that's it. Yes, thank you. Mean Mr. Mustard, where the sister's name was Shirley and not Pam. Things like that, little things that help you hear the person John Lennon really was. We have something here which is not actually from John Lennon. It's from National Lampoon, but I'm going to play it because I happen to know John Lennon appreciated it. It was something sort of taken from interviews he gave back in the very early 70s where he was pretty much upset at the way people were looking upon him as a kind of a god, and all these kids were following him around, you know, as if he was Buddha or something like that. And the words are taken almost word for word from various interviews that he's given to Rolling Stone, various other magazines. It's done by National Lampoon. It's called Magical Misery Tour. And the person that does the singing, does a very good Lennon imitation, is Tony Hendra. And again, a warning. There is language in here that you might have sensitive ears. And if you do, please, please tune away for the next five, perhaps 10 minutes, because we're going to follow that up with Working Class Hero, which is one of my all-time favorite John Lennon pieces. So first, Magical Misery Tour from the National Lampoon, and then Working Class Hero from John Lennon here on Brain Damage.
Shit right out of him. Yeah. soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. They hurt you at home and they hit you at school. They hate you if you're clever and they despise the fool. Till you're so fucking crazy you can't follow their rules. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. When they've tortured and scared you for 20 odd years, then they expect you to pick a career. When you can't really function, you're so full of fear. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. Keep you doped with religion, sex and TV. And you think you're so clever and classless and free. But you're still fucking peasants as far as I can see. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. There's room at the top, they are telling you still. But first you must learn how to smile as you kill. You want to be like the folks on the hill. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. If you want to be a hero, well, just follow me. If you want to be a hero, well, just follow me.
John Lennon from the Plastic Ono Band album, A Working Class Hero. This next piece comes from an interview done in 1971, an interview with John and Yoko. And it's available on the David Wigg interview album, which is an import, and I'm not sure if they're still pressing it at this point, but here it is, John Lennon and David Wigg.
Interview John Lennon and Yoko Ono, New York, 1971.
It just shows you then, with all the money one can earn, that doesn't bring security of mind, does it?
Well, you see, we earned millions and millions of money, but I must tell you that the Beatles got very little of it. We've all got houses, but it's usually we've managed to pay for them finally now after all these years.
Yeah.
And that really only happened since Klein came in, the so-called wolf. And there's millions earned, but we never got it, you know.
Well, who got it then, John?
Well, you know, there's lots of big companies in London with various names. You just have to check them out and their connection with the Beatles, and you see where the money's gone.
Everybody.
And in America, too. Everybody connected with us is millionaires, except for the Beatles.
You're not.
They used to tell Paul and I we're millionaires. We never have been. I might possibly be coming up to it shortly, you know, if we get lucky. But it's true, you know, we didn't get the money.
You certainly aren't a millionaire. You never have been a millionaire.
No.
Not George, Ringo.
No. George and Ringo are practically penniless. Yoko now has got more money than they had when Klein came in. And that's in 2 years, you know.
Yeah.
And we were working 10 years, and the money was just...
It's a contract, the wrong contract,
you know. You know, Brian was a beautiful guy, Brian Epstein, and he was an intuitive, theatrical guy, and he knew we had something, and he presented us well. But he had lousy business advice, not to say that somebody was crooking him particularly, but he got lousy advice.
Taking advantage of.
We all were, Brian included, you know, and none of us got it. So, I mean, that's life. I mean, you know, it's no big news that some artist or some kids in showbiz got robbed, right? It's the same old story. The attitude is, if they have money, they won't work.
Yes.
That's the old adage in show business.
Yes.
If you give the kids money, or the star, or the whoever he is, money, he won't work. That's not true. If you give an artist money, he's secure and he can work. It's the worrying about money and whether he's going to have to...
That's from an album called John Lennon live in New York City, recorded August 30th, 1972 at Madison Square Garden. And that was called New York City. We all know John Lennon loved New York City. That's why he eventually chose to make his home there. And the studio version of that song, I believe, was on the record called Sometime in New York City, which was a really interesting record. Patchwork assortment of all kinds of activist songs and just bizarre stuff with him and Yoko. I was driving around New York last night, really late last night, like around 2 or 3 in the morning, and I passed by the Dakota because, you know, I knew there was going to be a vigil there today, and I just wanted to see if anybody was over there then. I didn't see anybody. Could be because they all got chased away, I don't know, but it was just kind of neat driving around the city that John was so fond of, you know, seeing all the different parts of it from uptown, Harlem, downtown, Soho, and the Village, all kinds of places like that. No city like New York anywhere in the world, and no person like John Lennon anywhere in the world, that's for sure. We've been doing kind of a tribute, I guess, kind of a celebration in a way, too, because actually, you know, I wasn't even planning on doing this. I was planning on doing a regular talk show tonight, but I was listening to the radio earlier today, and I just heard all of the same songs over and over again. I mean, you know, Eleanor Rigby and Let It Be. Let It Be isn't even John Lennon. I don't know why they were playing that. But they're playing all these Beatles songs, you know. Oh, it's the 10th anniversary of John Lennon's death. Well, that means we get to play Beatle music all day long. And it's just, it's so much more than that, you know. It's the guy's life meant so much more. And what we're trying to do here tonight is just give you an overall picture, you know, in words, in music, and a couple other things, too. Like quotations. How about this? This is off the Associated Press. The unknown is what it is, and to be frightened of it is what sends everybody scurrying around chasing dreams, illusions, wars, peace, love, hate, all that. Unknown is what it is. Accept that it's unknown, and it's plain sailing. And that was said by John Lennon.
Can you let the musicians in?
We're just about out of time here. I want to finish off with one really commercial-sounding song, even though I said I wasn't going to do it. It's because it's a commercial-sounding song that I haven't heard in a long, long time, and I wonder, you know, whatever happened to it. It was done with, you know, they don't say the guy's name here. What's the guy's name that was big with Elton John, you know? I forget what the... He did a song called Bad Blood, too, at one point. Let me see if there's any hint of it on the record here. No, they don't even give him credit there. Can you believe that? Boy, no respect whatsoever. Well, you just have to figure it out on your own because I'm out of here now. I'll be back next week with a regular call-in program, hopefully, and we'll have something interesting to talk about. Maybe we'll be at war. Maybe we'll have all kinds of topics. All kinds of things to look forward to. Stay tuned for Raz. We're going to go out with this John Lennon tribute.
with whatever gets you through the night. Whether you like it or not, it's going to be Raz. Good night.
Hi, this is Matt with a concert billboard for Sunday, December 9th. Tonight, Exene Cervenka will be at Maxwell's. Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday, Anita Baker will be at the Westbury Music Fair. Living Color will be at the Academy on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Edie Brickell and the New Bohemians and John Hyatt will be at the Beacon Theater on Wednesday and Thursday. Same thing goes for Dr. John at the Lone Star. He's doing Wednesday and Thursday also. On Wednesday only, The Black Crowes, Cinderella, Vanilla Ice, and Wilson Phillips will be doing something for MTV over at the Ritz. On Saturday, December 15th, Roy Clark will be at the Queen's Theater, Michael Hedges will be at IMAC, Special Beat with Ranking Roger, and the Toasters will be at the Ritz, and the Connells will be at the Marquee. The Lounge Lizards will be at the Town Hall on December 18th. On December 20th, the Goo Goo Dolls will be at Woody's, and Every Mother's Nightmare will be at the Marquee. On the 21st, the Scofflaws and Rudiments will be at Ugo's Valley. Guar, Biohazard, and the Lunachicks will be at Sundance. Guar, the Lunachicks, and Calcan will be at the Academy on the 22nd. On the 26th, Urban Blight will be at the Lone Star Roadhouse. On the 27th, Circus of Power, White Trash, and White Zombie will be at the Ritz. On the 28th, Fish will be at the Marquee, and Agnostic Front and Sick of It All will be at Sundance. The Ramones will be at the Ritz on the 29th.